Detours family, welcome to another episode. I am here with my beautiful wife, Deb.
Hi, guys.
And we are here today talking about something that we've wanted to do an episode for a long time, right?
Yes, we have.
We will have guests in the future on this. We have not been able to coordinate it yet, but we've been getting questions just kind of in our personal lives about it a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's prompting the episode, and that is singleness. An episode about being single and being a Christian. That is
loaded.
For some reason, it feels taboo inside the church.
I don't know why it would be taboo when most of the church is single.
Yeah, 52% of, and you know, not including kids ministry, the people actually sitting in the sanctuary.
52%. Yeah, and tell me, where's that statistic even come from?
Just the information that we have on the people at Calvary Chapel that are in the sanctuary. Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
52% of the people sitting in the sanctuary, yes, are single. There's a lot to be said. I
want to know why they don't want to talk about it so much.
Well, when we say they, it's not Calvary Fort Lauderdale. It is the capital C church.
Yes, I am talking about they being the church as a whole.
Yeah, it's interesting how many churches don't have, they'll have couples ministry, but they don't have singles ministry.
Mm-hmm. Or the whole goal of the Christian is to be married and have a family, which... that's a wonderful goal, but that's sure. Not what everyone's called to.
Not everybody wants it.
Right.
Not everybody's called to it. Some people do want it.
Right.
Haven't been able to find it. Like there's so many different pockets to this that maybe that's why the church doesn't address it. But I think it's a mistake.
I agree.
To not address the single people in the room.
I always feel like singles are addressed as a dilemma that is trying to be fixed.
Yes.
By marriage. Instead of you're single, you're available, you can serve the Lord with wholeness of heart. Life is still good. You're not incomplete. Again, I always go back to the Jerry Maguire stigma that has just wrecked our culture is you complete me. Marriage doesn't complete us. It's nice and it's glorious, but it's not a completion of who we are. And the church doesn't say enough about that.
Yeah. And if you're in the category of not only am I single, but I don't want a relationship, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
There's so many levels of being single. It's looked at as there's something wrong with you. You're in your 30s or you're in your 40s and you're saying, what?
Been married. What's wrong with you? That's the connotation.
Yeah. And it's tough. It's tough to see it. It's tough to hear it. I wish I was in a better position to address it more. But there are no ministries for single people. It's rare to find
groups. There is single ministry, but it's for the 18 to 29-year-old?
Yeah, we have that, and that's, what do we just call it Calvary Young Adults.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter your relationship status, it's just that's your age range. So they do an okay job, but there is
what happened from 29 to, I don't know, I'm 50, so.
Yeah.
I said that out loud.
I know, you're in your 50s now.
I said it out loud.
You did, but that's also a huge demographic of the church that I don't know it's being mentored well.
Mm-hmm.
So entering into the 30s all the way up to, you know, our seniors ministry is 55 and older. We call it legacy builders.
Those are too. Lots of them are single as well.
Yeah. It's definitely, I mean, my goodness, my last relationship before, you know, leaving that last relationship and then getting together with you, there were 7 years in between it. So there were 7 years of singleness for me. And I'll tell you what, I never grew in Christ more than I did and find my identity, like comfort in my identity is who I was as an adult single man who loved Jesus. Those 7 years, I really believe God had me in that season with a purpose to get comfortable with who I was. So I'm so grateful for that. And I know you had a long season as well.
It was 7 years for me as well. And yeah, I had come off of a divorce. So I was a mom and a wife, and I didn't know who I was as a single woman. I didn't have a, like, once those roles are gone, I mean, I'll always be a mom, but it was difficult when I didn't have a, I guess, a title. Now I had the head tilt, oh, you're single title that I hated so much. So yeah, I agree. There was a lot of growing that had to take place in that 7 year span. It's wild that we both had 7 years of singleness.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I think it's so important to embrace those times, the 7 years for us. I loved it. That's when I got involved in convalescent ministry. And for a huge chunk of those 7 years, I was going into nursing homes, meeting people, saying hello, taking them to church, doing studies, all sorts. I mean, I did that. And you know, COVID kind of shut all of that down. But those friends that I did that with, they're still my friends to this day. As a matter of fact, during dinner, I was sitting there thinking, you know what, I got to reach out to my friends that are down there in Fort Lauderdale that I did convalescent, because when we do Christmas Eve service, I'll be there. We should grab something to eat if they're available, because I still hang out with them.
Can you tell the audience what convalescent is? Because that name doesn't always come up in everyday life.
It's just going into nursing homes and spending time with people and saying hello. So it's Florida. We have so many older and retired people here that our nursing homes are just overflowing. And typically the kids live in other states and so on. So there's a lot of loneliness down here and a lot of elderly. So our church, at one point, we were sending out over 300 people a week into nursing homes to go be with people. It was the largest ministry we had.
300 people a week.
Yeah, so we called our hospitality team, where the people that would sit at the doors and greet people and so on and so forth. And that's typically, in a church, that's typically the biggest ministry or volunteer opportunity, I should say, that they have. Any church is typically greeting or hospitality, whatever you call it. But for us, it was going out into the nursing homes. And it was interesting how God used that time serving him to prepare me for you. So in my singleness, I grew up without grandparents. Right. Everybody has four grandparents. My dad's dad passed away long before they got, before I was born, right after they got married. His mom died of cancer when I was very young. I really have no memory of her. And same with my mom's parents. They both passed away. I was very, very young. My mom's mom, I don't even have memory of. So I really grew up with no elderly in my life. So convalescent ministry never occurred to me to go serve in it. But God said, no, I want you to go over there. And I think part of that, in my singleness, God was preparing me how to be around elderly people, how to talk to them, how to care for them, so on and so forth. And because I gave God that time, unbeknownst to me, he was prepping me for you and your parents.
It's fantastic when you have hindsight and you're like, wow, Lord, you really were preparing us for one another. I didn't do anything, I don't think, that prepared me necessarily for you in particular, but I absolutely spent time serving at that. I mean, I had all this free time. So there was Trees of Hope, which I very much loved. There was another program called EMA, which was for single moms. And I got an opportunity to serve in that. There was no one to say, hey, can you be home tonight so we can spend time together? It was just me, myself, and I. And there was something beautiful about that. I didn't always feel that way, but there was definitely something beautiful about it. In seasons, I felt a little bit better about that.
Yeah, and part of serving, why we're spending a little bit of time on it, is when you're out, if you are out there looking for a relationship, what Deb and I over dinner last night, we were talking about some of this. I asked you what are kind of the buckets when you would go out on dates? What are the buckets that men fall in?
Oh boy.
And one of the ones that, you know, is why I'm mentioning volunteering is important. One of them is they were not prepared to spiritually lead a home.
Correct.
I think volunteering is a huge way to grow in that, because you're literally serving people, you're in God's will, you're in His word. Serving is a wonderful way to mature yourself and get yourself in that right mindset.
Yeah.
So talk to me about guys that were not spiritually mature, or you were just afraid that they would not be the leader of the household that you were looking for.
Well, I came from being divorced to a man who was not a Christian. And so I already knew what it felt like to be what the Bible calls unequally yoked. And it's very painful. I do not recommend. Just your viewpoints are just totally different. How you want to approach life is different. And so when I was looking at what was out there, these men were not, I'm like, if I have to submit to a man, he best be submitting to you, God. Like, he has to be on fire for you as much as me or more. Otherwise, why would I do this again? And I was finding a lot of guys that wore the title of Christian. Yeah, I'm a Christian. I go to church. Well, that doesn't necessarily make you a Christian. You know, and you'd ask them simple questions like, what's your favorite Bible verse? And they couldn't come up with one. They didn't really have any foundation of why they believed what they believed. And that was so important to me, because I came to Christ much later in life. And so there was a lot of questions that I wrestled with before I became a Christian. And, you know, you'll ask a guy, well, what's your salvation story? Well, I've always been a Christian. That would get me. No, you have not always been a Christian.
Everybody has that
origin story.
Yeah. Moment. Sure.
Yeah. Even if you grew up in a Christian home, there is at some point where your faith becomes your own. And they couldn't even tell me that. So that was one of the buckets I dealt with, was, are you able to be a spiritual leader? Can I look to you when I have questions? Can I trust that you're going to base your decisions for us as a family on the word of God?
And it was hard finding that. And this is a subject where I think some of this bleeds even outside of relationship, but just people that watch Christians or are friends with Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were a lot of people that, as I was dating, that labeled themselves as Christians, but 5 minutes into a date, you could realize, okay, yeah, they really just, I'm an American, therefore I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
Type of situation, rather than having any head knowledge of who Jesus was, let alone making Him the top priority of their life. So that's one bucket that you have to be sensitive to.
Did you have a bucket? Besides, because we both share that bucket, what bucket did you come across that you would categorize women into when you were single?
We mentioned it yesterday as well, but just the category of kind of being boring. There's definitely that.
Well, with boring.
I don't. That's why we're the perfect couple.
I'm far from boring.
Yeah, I get a front row seat to the Deb Marcellisi show, and it's quite entertaining, to say the least.
I'm flattered, and I don't know if I should take that as a really good compliment, or I'm just a weird.
Hey, well, whatever. I'm attracted to weird, I guess. But no, yeah, people that really couldn't hold up a conversation, very interesting conversation, a lot of.
Were they just shallow?
Some shallow, some were very cookie cutter answers. You know, what do you value? It was always family, you know, and I understand that. It's not like family's not important to me. Don't get me wrong, but.
You felt like that's what they were saying because they felt it was the right thing to say?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, again, and again, some of this is relevant to people that aren't looking to date, and some people that are just looking to get to know Christians. Don't answer honestly. Don't answer a certain way because you think this is what a Christian would say. And that was, I kind of categorize that in the bucket of boring, because that's so many people did it that it was just, okay, this is boring me already. So, you know, as a single person, that was out there looking to meet someone, I was looking for people that had original answers that could elaborate on them.
Yeah, I get that.
So don't tell me travel's important to you. Don't tell me that family's important to you. My family, we don't talk about how important family is. We don't even think about it. But the minute something happens.
Yeah, you guys are, you have each other's back.
Instantly.
Yes.
We are there. And, but we don't, you know, so many people sit around and talk about how important family is. But then when push comes to shove.
They're selfish.
They don't show up.
Right.
So, you know, trying to find, you know, somebody found you where you back up what you say was really important to me. So that was tough as well.
And I think in the boring category, you also have people that can't hold a conversation because they're so like enthralled with themselves. So they can hold a conversation with themselves. They can talk about themselves. But having a conversation that's two-way doesn't always happen.
That's always tough. Maybe you don't get questions reciprocated.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, part of this is mentoring the next generation. How many?
But wait, there are plenty of older people that can't have a good conversation either. I mean, I was dating men into their, God, I'm embarrassed to say, into their 60s, and they had nothing to bring to the table.
But we kind of started off the episode by saying our friends are coming to us with these questions, and the people that we're talking to are typically 30s and 40s as far as age group goes.
Okay.
So turning around and helping people that are truly interested in finding a relationship, I think we do have to mentor them on some level. Maybe mentor is too strong of a word, but how to have conversation, how to have a back and forth. It's becoming a lost art because so many people are on their phones.
Mm-hmm.
So many people will be on a date and pick up their phone too frequently.
That's obnoxious.
So just being able to, you know, talk to people, especially about, I think one of the things that we did that we got right in our relationship is neither one of us were willing to compromise. So, well, on the critical
things. On the big thing.
Yeah, on the big things.
Correct.
So what were your list of gotta haves when you were looking?
Well, gotta have was I didn't want someone that wanted to start a family. I was at an age where I could not picture going from, you know, a young 20-something to a diaper bag. And I kept finding men that were like much older. I kept dating older men thinking that they were done with being brand new dads. Like I could have easily dated someone that had older kids that were out of the house, but I did not want to raise any more children. And that was really one of the things I would not compromise on. I did not want to date a smoker. I am an ex-smoker, and I didn't want to be around that because I didn't want to potentially be like, well, this is so gross, I might as well join them. Like, you can't beat them, join them. So I didn't want that. And I didn't want to date anyone who was a recovering addict because I had, you know, my previous husband had 15 years sobriety and then, boom, started all over again.
Yeah, our lists were...
What was yours?
Yeah, our lists were basically identical. I had three. Christian, non-smoker, no, didn't want to have kids. I had never dated or had any history with, you know, recovering from anything. So that wasn't even on my radar. So our lists were virtually identical. Yeah. And then there were a lot of nice-to-haves, but nothing that was a deal-breaker outside of those three items.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was one of those things, and we both kind of just nod at one another whenever we say this, but just I was comfortable being single. It took me a while to figure out how to get comfortable being single, but then if you're going to get in a relationship, that person should just naturally add to who you are.
Exactly.
As they are. Come as you are, and you'll naturally add more to who I am.
We talked about it last night when we were pre-briefing for, you know, this episode, which is like, you'll see a lot of women now in the culture who maybe back in the day, 20, 30 plus years ago, well, maybe more than 30, but economically, women could not support themselves. You've gotten to a stage in culture where women can be self-sufficient. So they're a lot less willing to, if you don't add to my life, why would I do this? Like, I can do this single thing. I can support myself. I have friends. I have, you know, family. Why would I do this unless you add value? And that's part of the thing I'm seeing in a lot of the younger women that I, you know, that I see and spend time with, is they're like, yeah, well, meh.
Yeah, it's critical that that's the approach, you know, if you want, typically, not always, but typically kids is a deal breaker. A, do you want them? Yes or no. B, how many do you want? If the answer is yes, I do want some. So typically that's a deal breaker. I won't say for everyone, but and have those conversations super early. Super early. I'm actually a big proponent of taking premarital through the church pretty early on. Not that you're going to get engaged as soon as you get out of the class, but it's going to prompt you to ask truly the questions you need to be asking.
Right.
So a lot of people freak out going, oh my goodness, as soon as I, yeah, that's too much of it. And that's not the point of the class. The class is a check in the box a lot of times if you need to get married at the church, but it's also going to weed out the conversations, how you do finances, how you you want to handle kids, how you would handle a blended family if that's you. So if you're out there dating or trying to get in that world, I actually highly encourage that. You know, within several months of beginning to date is when I like to put that out on the table.
Yeah, I think that's wise counsel, actually. We did it pretty early. And I think we were also, and I know I came to the table with like, hey, I am older than you, as I smirk. And my thought was like, I don't have time to waste. And you were single for so long, you probably felt the same thing. Like, let's get it out on the table. Otherwise, why do this thing? And I don't know that everyone's that straightforward, but it really worked for us.
And it's half of the equation is just getting the answer. If you're comfortable with who you are and you're looking at another person and trying to find out if they're going to add to your life, half of the equation is let's get some of that out on the table right out of the gate. Let's have those conversations. And if you pass those tests, then the second half of the equation begins, which is, and it can run parallel, but let's go to Bible study together. Let's serve together. Let's go on a short-term mission trip together. All those types of things are wonderful to add to it as well.
Yeah. As a woman, I want the man to bring that up. If I want you to lead me, I want you to be saying those things. And unfortunately, that's not happening. Like when you look at churches, where are all the single Christian men?
Yeah, and that's the influx, the largest growth in the church that's happening right now are men from 18 to 25 years old. That's the largest influx that we're seeing at Calvary Fort Lauderdale right now. So it's a long time coming.
Mm-hmm.
I remember maybe 3 years ago, our men's ministry, we had our conference, and only 700 men came. And for a church our size, that's absolutely nothing. Where our women's conference was always over 3,000 women. So it was like 6-1. And in the sanctuary, it's about 60-40 typically. But now the men's conference has grown tremendously. We were probably really jogging my memory, but I think it was around 1,500 last time. So we doubled.
Double.
Yeah, we've doubled in the last couple of years. And like I said, that youth is really starting to come into the church.
They're hungry.
They are, especially the young men, because young men were the ones that were torn apart during COVID. Being a man was a negative thing, you know, demasculating through the media and the news and so on and so forth. So I think the youth, the men are coming back into the church for sure, which is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and we've talked about this today, being comfortable in your singleness, that's not something that you can necessarily figure out overnight. Some people are very comfortable in that space and others are not comfortable right now.
Right.
How did you find comfort in being single?
How did I find comfort? Well, I wasn't initially comfortable with the idea because
yeah, me neither.
If I want to just be raw about the whole thing, I was like, what do you mean? I'm never going to have, you know, I'm never going to have sex again. That makes no sense to me. And I know that sounds like a really selfish thing to look towards when you are looking at long-term singleness, but maybe I'm just saying the thing that's in everyone's head that they don't want to say out loud. That part of being disappointed was like, I am still very much alive in that area. I don't want to give that up. I will, because that's what you call me to in singleness, but I wasn't happy about that. And there's a phrase in the Bible, or I don't remember where it is, and it's not a phrase, but I'm going to paraphrase. It's like, it's you're better to be married than to burn with desire. And at early on, I was burning with desire. So that was kind of my, I had to get over that more than anything else. And I just kept bringing that to Jesus. Like, you know, I want this, but I don't want it outside of your will. And then talking to women that were also single so that you can almost, I know it sounds weird, but you could grieve the possibility that you weren't going to get that again. Because that's the reality it boils down to, is I was going to do it God's way. I had done life before Jesus very carnally. I mean, very. And so I kept saying to those in my friend group, I'm reclaiming my virginity. And even in the Christian realm, there are people that are like, what do you mean?
Oh, that in dating other quote-unquote Christians, so, the vast majority want
to
be
weird to me. It is. You can't Burger King Christianity. You can't have it your way. It doesn't work like that. You're dying to self. So that I needed other people to help me find comfort and just grieve it. And then I needed, because I'm an extrovert and social relationships bring me joy and bring me energy, I needed to make sure I had a full social calendar. Otherwise, being home too long would put me in despair. So part of how I found comfort was to really learn myself. And you could do that in singleness. You get to figure out who you are. And I was definitely not one that was comfortable with being antisocial. So I needed to find things that supported me. I also threw myself into every possible study I could get my hands on, because when I was previously married, it was like anytime I wanted to talk about the Bible, it was just met with such disdain that I wanted people to engage and have intellectual conversations about the Bible and be excited as I was. So part of surviving was finding a community of people that were intellectually stimulating and excited about Jesus so that I could share that part of my life with them. What about you?
Yeah, for me, it was getting plugged in and volunteering, right? Doing convalescent ministry, but also distributing food out into the community. Our ministry is called Food Share, doing that. That was critical for me.
Why was that critical?
Because it's just a servant heart, just learning what it's like to have a servant heart. And even if you have nothing, if you're a single mom and you don't have money, you can't tithe, everybody's got time that they can give back to God. Mm-hmm. And so doing that, it changes who you are. It changes the posture of your heart. And so many times, all it takes is just showing up. And if you aren't volunteering, you're never even presenting yourself with an opportunity to show up. Going into those retirement homes, those people didn't know who I was. I just showed up. And it meant the world to them. And yeah, you're sitting in there and some of them repeat themselves over and over and over again. And this, that, but you're there with a servant heart and an open hand and you're going, God, I'm giving this time back to you. So that was huge for me. Also, the drumming was huge. That's what I did for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I started with the attitude of I'm doing this for them. And then when I finished convalescent ministry, I went, holy smokes, I was so blessed by them. So my attitude on that one changed for sure. But then the drumming itself, like you, I didn't want to have idle hands. I stayed busy. So drumming, we practiced as a group 3 times a week, Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday. I would go by myself. Then we would have shows, all sorts of things like that. So,
and that brought you comfort how? Just being in community?
I enjoyed the people that were there were amazing. The majority of the people that were there were all single, ironically enough. As a matter of fact, in a good era, Black Friday, you and I are going to go be spending the evening with two of the ladies that I used to drum with.
Yeah.
You know, so that they were just amazing people that have love for life. Sweet people, a great, just good friends, truly just good friends. I met good people through that. Still love them to this day.
Yeah.
So those were the two major things. And then, like you said, I didn't get into a Bible study, but I was going to church Saturday night, Sunday morning, and Wednesday night. So I didn't have a Bible study like you would go to Bill's house and do a Bible study, but I was doing lots of church service. In studies at the church. So those were kind of my three big pillars that during my season of singleness really started to prepare me to spiritually lead a home. I guarantee you, when I got saved, I didn't even know what a spiritual leader was.
Right.
I was just doing things because I was on fire for Jesus. He saved my life. So I just wanted to get out there and start doing things. But little did I know, Jesus was prepping me for something I didn't even know existed.
Amazing. Amazing. We're going back to the buckets of different people in the single realm. Did you have any other buckets that were kind of painful, like people fell into this particular, like I got ghosted a lot, which was very hard.
Yeah, I got that a little bit. The hardest one for me was people that claimed to be a Christian when they weren't a Christian, because you can figure that out within 5 minutes of showing up. And when it was, oh, you really aren't a Christian, it's, I never would have come.
Had it known.
But
yeah.
We're here now, so we might as well, enjoy the cup of coffee or tacos or whatever it was we decided we were going to do.
Yeah.
That was by far the largest bucket for me.
Okay.
So, and I think that's the in talking to our friends, that seems to be where they get the most frustrated.
I would agree. I would agree.
Is that like from the women? Because you mostly deal with ladies. That seems to be.
Yeah, that's definitely a big one on the list. And then you have the, people who are ultimately not, besides the Christianity, just in general, not rightly representing themselves.
Sure.
Yeah, they're fake. And you find that out real soon. And, they tell you what they want to hear. You make me want to be a better man. And you're like, you just met me, bro, like 2 weeks ago. How do I make you want to be a better man? Like, just the nonsense love bombing. A lot of the women I know have come across that as being a big thing. Yeah.
It's definitely interesting and difficult.
I don't envy anyone who's single at this point in this dating.
Who wants to be part of a couple.
Right.
That is out there actively seeking. It is difficult. But as we said before, don't compromise. If there are those things that are in Christ, like no sex before marriage, obviously has to be a Christian. But then you're going to have your own, whether it's kids or smoking or this, that, and the other. Don't compromise, because it's so much better in the long run. You and I align on so many things just naturally that it makes life easier. I couldn't imagine if you are a smoker trying to do life with you. I don't know what you're going to sit out in the garage and.
That's how it would
drag.
Yeah, that's how it would go down.
So if you're out there and you're looking for a relationship, don't compromise. Write up your list of the things that you want.
I had someone say recently, don't tell me about the list again. I've already wrote my list and I haven't gotten very far. Is there an alternative to the list?
To me, there's not. I would say there's not. You have to hold on to that list.
Right.
Because not holding on to the list means you're compromising.
That's a good point.
Right. If I put aside the things that I want, then I'm compromising.
Right. Just for the sake of not being alone. Yeah. And that gets dangerous.
But this is one of those areas where people can get very impatient with God.
Right.
And again, in the 7 years before we got together, God was constantly and slowly refining me in so many different ways. We've already talked about the, you know, being with elderly, but even drumming, just the mentality. We were studying, we studied Japanese culture, and just the character of a samurai, and just the Bushido code is almost the samurai's equivalent to maybe the Ten Commandments, if you will, but it just understanding and acting that out on stage and meditating on that truly changed who I was as a person.
So it's like a code of ethics for the warrior?
Yeah. It, one of the seven is duty. What is your duty? Gi, what is your duty?
Mm-hmm.
So I would sit and look at Christianity and I would go, what is my duty? What is my responsibility as a Christian? So I would take my Christianity and look at things through that Bushido code. And that was just one thing that I was doing. That wasn't like the end all be all, but it really helped me look at things through a different angle. And so just that singleness of going and studying drums for a decade and just that culture, everything there truly did prepare me. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, it was a blessing. So the people that are getting impatient, it's, you know, King David, he killed Goliath, but
he was a teenager.
Yeah, but how many times was he sitting there in a field with his sling and a rock and a Pepsi can sitting on the side of a fence, and he goes, let me see if I can knock that Pepsi can over. Not that they had Pepsi, but you get the point.
I get the point, yeah.
The mundane, he was so diligent in the mundane that then God would give him a bigger moment going, hey, here's a wolf coming.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I'm going to use the same thing that I used to knock over the Pepsi can. I'm going to use that on a wolf. And then it would go back to the mundane.
It's a training ground.
It was totally a training ground, but the most diligent training happens in the mundane. So the people that are sitting there and they're going, when is this ever going to happen? Honor God in the mundane and he will honor you and you will get exactly what is on your list. And I think the person that pushes away the list, got to be careful with that attitude, because again, you're pushing away what you want, what's critical for you. And we can sit there and be statisticians and show statistics to God, and he just kind of rolls his eyes. I would go, hey, I've been 7 years single. Here's all the stuff I'm doing for you and nothing.
Right.
And I could go, statistically, I know people that aren't very good people and they're in relationship.
Married, yeah.
They're happy. They're over here. They're over there.
A little of that with.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I had a friend of mine approach me, and that was one of the things that he was saying is, you know, I follow Christ and I'm diligent and.
And then the bad guy gets the girl.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw a lot of that in the church, and I was just like, I don't get it. What is going on here? Yeah, that was hard. That's hard. Let me ask you this. I think we touched on it when we were pre-briefing, but, and I think you even mentioned it on the previous podcast, do you fall in the camp of there's one person that God has for you and that's your person? Or do you fall in the camp of, as long as I'm in the center of God's will, there's some liberty in who I can be with, and God is going to bless that as long as it's of him?
Yeah, this is a question that's often like end times for people, where they're definitively within one camp. Like, I am pre-trib and I will not entertain the other end times views.
Okay.
This is one of those questions in Christianity where people typically fall in one camp or another, and they don't see and they don't talk through the other side and process it. You and I are the same on this
right.
particular view. A lot of people will, and we've all, when we got saved, we all sat there and went, oh, gee, and I actually think Jesus gets a kick out of it, but we would go, dear Jesus, do you want me to have a hamburger or pizza for lunch today?
Huh.
Where you literally pray through every single thing and you need it to pass through God's filter. Where when you start to look, and you'll see it a lot in career paths.
Mm-hmm.
God, I've got two different jobs, three different potential jobs. Please tell me which one I'm supposed to take. I don't want to make a decision without you confirming that I'm supposed to be here, there, or whatever. You'll see it a lot in students when they're getting ready to pick colleges.
Yeah, that's true.
You see it a lot in the bigger decisions in life, especially. And certainly a spouse is that decision. I fall into the camp of, as long as I'm operating in the
will
of God, there are tons of potential partners for me to choose from. I do not believe, as amazing as our story is, and as much as I adore you and love you, I do believe that God just says, hey, follow my will,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to meet lots of amazing women. And if they're in my will, make the decision yourself.
Yeah, I'm on that side of the fence too. I don't believe in soulmates.
No, and even as amazing as our story is, for the audience, we were together for 6 months and then apart for 18 months, not talking, nothing, and then God intervenes and gets us back together. It is amazing as our story is. Yeah, I truly believe, like, if you're a student and you're trying to make a decision on what college to go to, am I going to go to, you know, University of Miami, or am I going to go to Central Florida? God, tell me which one to go. I think he's more concerned on who you are as a person when you get to where you're going than saying you need to be in Miami or you need to be at Central Florida.
I agree. I think that goes across the board for, you know, employment and relationships and friendships. It's less about where you are, but who you are in the location God has you, no matter what that location is.
Yeah. What's more important to God, your physical location or the location of your heart?
Right.
Right. God, that's where, in the Garden of Eden, God asks Adam, where are you?
Mm-hmm. He knew where he was.
It had nothing to do with his physical location. It had everything to do with Adam. You need to reflect on where you are spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I believe what I believe is God doesn't care what job I have. Am I honoring him? Am I walking?
Right.
Now, you know, where I struggle as an employee of the church, you'll see a lot of people during missions week that refuse to come to missions week because they're terrified that God is going to say, hey, drop everything that you're doing, this life that you love. I want to send you to Calcutta, India. You'd be missionaries. You know, are there God stories out there like that?
Sure, there are.
Absolutely. Where God calls someone to something totally unexpected.
Right.
But I absolutely believe that if you're operating within God's will, he just cares about who you are. So, yeah, that's one of those things that I think the majority of people actually don't agree with us.
That's odd to me, but, you know, I take a liberal view of that. Like, I think God gives us the liberty in our singleness to make choices. And I think it also teaches us that there is some freedom as long as you're within the boundaries. It's like when you have kids, you're raising kids to make decisions on their own, but you've given them clear boundaries of what is good and what is not good for them. And you hope in time that they stay within the boundaries you set for them. And you put those boundaries up because you love them. You know, don't cross the street without looking both ways. You know, don't hang out with the kid that's on the street corner doing drugs. Like, these are just boundaries that as a parent, you do that all the time with your kids. And that's what God does. He wants us to come to these good decisions as we grow. And sometimes, you know, we have to hit our head on the wall a few times in order to get the lesson. But ultimately, I think there's a lot of freedom in that. And I love that about God, that it's relational.
I love the freedom that comes with Christianity. So many non-believers look at Christianity as handcuffs. Yeah, I can't drink. I can't. Freedom is the ability to say no to something.
Yes.
It's, do you have the ability to say no? And saying no, does it take away from your happiness? The ultimate freedom is I can say no to whatever comes at me and I'm completely content. Paul says he learned to be content.
And that's why I think contentment and happiness are very different things. And I think Christian culture gets it wrong just as much as secular culture. We think happiness is the end all be all, but happiness is circumstantial. Contentment is no matter what season of life you have me in, I'm content in who you are. Therefore, I can be content when I'm having a hard time.
Yeah, and finding contentment in singleness is so critical because then you have the ability to be wise. Wisdom comes from peace. You don't see a whole lot of wisdom when
people are
panicking. Yeah. Freaking out, this, that, and the other. So you want to have wisdom when trying to determine if someone's the right partner for you or if you even want to have a partner. There are people that are considering, I don't know if I want to go through this again or even get into a relationship to begin with. That wisdom that you'll need for whatever that decision is for you comes from peace.
Mm-hmm.
So be at peace and find that, learn and choose contentment. Paul had to learn how to be content.
In all situations.
Yeah.
In prison, he was content. Being beat, he was content. You know, serving the Lord and spreading the gospel, he was content. I like when anyone that says that understands the life of Paul knows that those words were not penned without massive suffering. He was credible to write those on paper. He was credible because his life was ups and downs and peaks and valleys. And that guy suffered and he found contentment regardless. So sometimes when we reference scripture, we forget the impact of what's behind that scripture. That's why you got to study your word. You got to take something not just for what it says, but what's the background behind it? Who's writing it? What did they go through? What was their life like? And Paul was content in all things, and that's something to aspire to. Not that I want to be in a season of nothing but suffering, but, you know, I want to be able to come to contentment.
So if someone is wrestling with just how do I become content in my singleness with the fact that I am single, I've been single a long time and I don't want to be single anymore.
Right.
How is contentment even possible? Where do they begin?
Okay, so it goes back to you can't be inconsolable. Like, there are people that want to speak encouragement into your life and want to help you walk through this feeling of hopelessness that you have. And you could look at it two ways, like, stop. You're telling me everything I've already done, everything I've already heard, I don't want to hear it. You're annoying. Or you can look at that person and welcome the encouragement and have them help you walk the road of, this is hard and I don't really like where I'm at. But I don't want to lose hope because my hope is not found in necessarily, yeah, I guess, you know, as a single person, if you really want to be married, the hope is being married. But you could still find hope along the way because the hope is anchored in who Jesus is, that you're always in relationship with Jesus. You're always in a relationship with him. And let people like help you.
Yeah.
Hope is a big one.
And that's why I always go back to serving, because the Bible says, take delight in the Lord and he'll give you the desires of your heart. If you desire to be a spouse, the first thing you're called to do is take delight in the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Go and serve. Go and serve. Let it change who you are as a person. If you don't think you can change, go serve in kids ministry.
Yeah, that'll change you.
It'll change who you are. I guarantee it. And if for some reason that doesn't go the opposite and go do convalescent and find something, but start delighting in the Lord.
And delighting in the Lord can also not just be serving, but spending time in his presence, spending time in his word, spending time getting to know him and be in relationship with him. Instead of just going to church and going to a Bible study and having, you know, an intellectual discussion about who God is, like, get to know him. Like, we sometimes, and I'll reframe and say sometimes even I forget, like, this is a real relationship and I want to honor you because you're so good to me. It's not just words on a page. I want to know who you are.
And again, if you start delighting in the Lord, I remember we have a mutual friend at our church that isn't able to have kids. And she talked about how God removed the desire from her. She used to desire to have kids, found out she wasn't able to, but she continued to delight in the Lord, and he actually removed that desire from her, and she no longer desires to be a mother. And
that's a gift.
It's freedom.
Yeah.
It's pure freedom. So, you know, God can change your desires when you take delight in him. And if you desire to be in a relationship, then you got to start with delighting in the Lord, worshiping him, like you said, serving, just coming with that heart over and over and over again, and let him do all the math.
Mm.
It's one of those things, if you sit and try and solve the equation and you're going, well, there's 4 billion women on the planet, Lord, I'm just asking for one, right?
You heard people say this?
Gosh, yes. I've heard every angle on the book. You know,
no.
Why can't he just pull one out of the 4 billion? You know, it, take delight in the Lord, and math doesn't matter. God, I do believe God cares about data. I do, as a data guy and a digital guy. But a data guy would never say we need to leave the 99 to go after the one, and God still does.
Yeah, that's a great point.
If you take delight in the Lord, he will give you the desires of your heart, because he promises that.
Mm-hmm.
So focus on that. How do I take delight in the Lord?
Right. And let's break down the fact that the desires of our heart actually become his desires. When you delight in the Lord, he changes your desires. So sometimes people read that and think, well, God's just going to give me whatever I want if I just love and serve him.
Yeah, you have. I desire a Corvette.
Right. It's the prosperity gospel. We lose track of the fact that when you are so entrenched in the Lord and you're delighted in him, he changes your desires. I had completely different desires before I was a Christian, and none of them were holy. And now I desire things, like, if you would have told that 20-something-year-old or even 35, 33, I would have been like, are you crazy? I would desire that? I can't imagine. But God changes you. So I wish that people really, truly understood that. I think that their life would be a lot more rich and full to understand that that's what that verse is saying, that it isn't you're just going to get whatever you want, like a genie in the sky. And I don't mean to sound irreverent. There are people that think that, but maybe never say it out loud. And it's a misconception of what that verse means.
Yeah, that verse is more along the lines of, you know, if you're out there working and abiding in the will of God, you're naturally going to desire the same things God does. So therefore, yeah, he's going to, his desires that he has, you now align with them. So of course, you're going to get what you want because he always gets what he wants. He wants more souls. He wants more servants.
Yeah.
He wants humbleness. He wants meekness. He wants all sorts of amazing attributes. And you become that when you delight in him. And so, you know, be patient in that process. That's for you and I, it was 7 years between relationships. 7 years. That's a long time, man.
Yeah, it is a long time. And I dated a lot of really not nice people, like not that they weren't nice, but it was just like, I wonder if I would have just not dated anybody, if I would have been happier.
Yeah. So if you're struggling with the contentment part of it, again, to do start diving into that verse of take delight in the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
That'll really help that area. So, but I think, you know, there's a lot more on this topic that we want to explore, but I think we want to do it with some guests.
Absolutely.
We've got several guests in mind for this, so we are going to revisit.
We've been doing that for a while. We need to nail it down because
The hard part is several of the guests are not nearby, physically nearby. Sure. We've got to coordinate trips to get it done, but this is such, you and I, we relate with this because we were single for so long.
Yep.
I didn't get married till I was almost 40. You and I got married. I was almost 40 years old. That's super late.
Yes.
By most people's standards for someone that was never divorced anyway. So, you know, I certainly can relate to this because I was one of those people that was sitting there getting frustrated. And there's some validity to what we kind of started the episode with of, the church caters to the married with children audience, and the single crowd gets left out a lot of time.
Yeah, we get the leftovers.
Yeah, so there's, you know, that's where that especially, I want to bring in some people to talk through that because that's not true in God's eyes at all.
Right.
And to get some people that have walked through that and walked through it well, I think they have some invaluable advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. I think they would be fantastic. We just need to get them here.
Yeah. So we will revisit this subject for sure.
We're not done with singleness.
No, there's too much to cover on this topic, but we wanted to kick it off because we've both been approached by several people here lately that were frustrated or not content and, you know, asking questions and all sorts of things. And we say, you know what, we've been putting this off for too long. So here's the first of many episodes.
First of many. Very true.
So we'll get those guests in and we will come back to this. But thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate it.
Yeah, guys, we do. Like and subscribe. Share this podcast with a friend. We would be so grateful for that.
Yes. Thank you guys
for listening.
Yep. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next time.
All right. Bye.